Apparently, I can't get the fucking losers in my hallway to go to the water park on Saturday, so I'll probably be sitting in my room doing nothing. So I'll fucking, I'll produce it.
I got a broken foot.
Whatever, dude. Hello and welcome to the Ritual Misery Podcast, episode beta 39 for Wednesday, the 18th of Thursday, the 18th of June, 2015. Man, I almost had it right. This is the show where two lifelong friends talk about geek stuff and whatever else comes to mind. I'm Amos, and with me tonight is that dude right there named Kent. How you doing, man?
Good, dude. What's up?
I'm $200 richer from the old bingo night. I'm actually like up 150 or some shit, but it'll go away in the next couple weeks anyway, so not that it matters. But hey, you know, so far it's paying for itself. How you doing tonight, Ray?
Oh, by me.
That good.
You stole $100.
Look, if you leave it on the ground and just walk away, am I really wrong for picking it up? And
oh my turn, god! And you guys are distracting me so much. I couldn't see the bingo in front of my face. Oh, by the way, you have bingo. Oh wait, bingo! Yours didn't count. I'll get you $100 now.
So me and Ray were playing some bingo with some friends of ours tonight, and I won a couple times, and one time that he should have won but didn't claim it in time, so. It happens.
Oh, so a couple of old guys.
So basically his broken foot affected his mental capacities. Yep. All right, man. Kent, what you been up to this week, man?
Relaxing a lot, actually. You know, this whole retirement thing, it's pretty cool.
You've got more than three hairs in your face right now, so.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I went back to karate this week, so that was nice to get back into that groove.
Is that a bar?
I'm sorry?
Karate, you mean like actual karate, like what 12-year-olds do? Karate?
Or what grown folks do.
Okay.
I noticed behind you, you have a picture of Helio Gracie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you know about the martial arts.
I know about jiu-jitsu. I don't know about anything else.
So he knows about the martial art. Just one.
Yeah.
The only
singular.
One. The only
singular
one.
Singular form.
The only one that I know that's effective.
Yeah. Right. And how effective is it with your broke ass foot?
Well,
let me try this ankle lock on you real quick.
Well, first you have to get to my
It's not the proximity, it's the avoidance, because it's not hard to catch up to him. I can't guarantee you that.
True that. So, all right. What kind all right, of karate do you do?
Go ahead.
Kind of
Shotokan. I do Shotokan karate.
Oh, okay. That's respectable a little bit. Better than like the other karates. So,
yeah. Every art has its merits, I think.
True. I agree. But I think jiu-jitsu is... Because I've never been to... Like, I've tried a lot of martial arts, but I've never been to a martial arts class where, say, like a 90-pound girl would just whoop my ass. And I felt like, except for jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, that's kind of why Helio Gracie did what he did, was because he was small and weak.
Absolutely.
And he needed to modify jiu-jitsu to work for smaller, weaker people. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Absolutely.
I just can't help but smile anytime I hear BJJ. So. I mean, if I could ever get past that, I might actually have much more interest in jiu-jitsu and, you know,
well,
just
people,
saying.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their hang-ups. The BJJ is mine. I'm just, you know.
I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, that's so gay and whatever. And then I show them pictures of my class where I walk surrounded by women, like hot women. And then they're like, well, maybe I should come to class. Yeah, I mean, where else is your head going to be in between the woman's crotch 50% of the time?
Ballet.
90%
of that,
actually.
Just saying.
Yeah, if you're doing ballet like that, I think you're doing it wrong.
Or you're doing it right. I'm just saying.
Or maybe, yeah. Maybe I'm the one that's got it wrong.
I'm thinking that's a win because you can't have, you know. Anyway, something about dependipotamus or something. Not being able to do ballet. So it's kind of like a no-risk deal. Okay, so Ray, what have you been up to, man?
Well, besides getting bingo stolen from me, you know, I went to the Hard Rock Cafe in Seoul.
Nice.
I met one of my friends there from Maryland, Dana, who is a jiu-jitsu chick, and who is a 105-pound girl who could probably whip a lot of these asses. And she's only one.
But let's go.
Nice.
Is she going to whoop your ass for saying that she's 105 pounds?
She might be one. You know, I don't know how. She's not that heavy.
I'm just saying, that's a risky proposition, just throwing a woman's weight out there.
Oh, damn. You know. Well, she might have said that. Shit.
She's going to now.
Damn it. And now we just drew, like, if she had missed it, we now just drew attention to the fact that you claimed out her weight like that. So she's going to be rewinding and calling your ass.
All right, Dana. I know you're probably going to listen to this. I don't know how much you weigh, but I know it's not that much. And I just put a shout out that you can whip a lot of these asses probably just because, you know, you're a white belt in jiu-jitsu.
So he's hoping those two balance out, is what he's saying.
Oh, God.
He's
yeah.
really hoping those two balance out.
But
I see an ankle lock in your future.
Okay, so serious question though. I mean, would you rather have an ankle lock placed on the ankle or the foot that's already broken, or would you rather have it on the other foot?
An ankle lock really. Ankle locks, I don't tap to because they don't really do anything but cause pain. Unlike a heel hook or a toe hold. Toe hold, I would definitely try. But an ankle lock, I'll get it out.
There you go. So that's what your friend can do on you when she finds out you just blasted her weight all over the internet.
Whatever, she can't take me.
Oh, challenge issued.
I'm a man.
I don't know if your cojones could cash the checks your mouth is writing right now. But
no, there have been a lot of girls that hit my ass. It's fairly common, and that's why I love the art, because you know, I know that if it can work for a 110-pound woman, it can work for anyone.
Cool. All right, so my activities over the weekend were mostly sleeping, and I recorded another couple episodes of the O Lounge Comedy Cast. It's actually something I forgot to mention last week, that I'm now doing another podcast with a local comedy club.
What?
And, yeah. Hell yeah, man. I started this bitch. I'll do what I want, all right?
Do what I want.
And yeah, there's some good comedy going out on that. So if you want to look at O Lounge Comedy Cast on iTunes, you'll be able to find it there. We got about 3 episodes out there right now. I should have more this weekend. So yeah, good times. Local comedies or local comics and some better known folks from Seoul. All these guys are on the amateur level, the upper amateur, lower pro level. And, you know, they're at that cusp of they could break free at any time and make it big. And, you know, these comedy casts are some of their trial runs and things like that they're going to be taking back to the States and doing, you know, pretty big shows with. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've listened to a few of the bits that you put out there, and yeah, it's pretty funny stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. And that expands me a little bit more about the podcasting universe, recording and all that other stuff. It just gives me another side of the action and another technical aspect to look at, just to become better at the whole art of it. The actual producing while it's happening, the post-production, and generating the podcast itself, getting the graphics together and all that stuff, it's just going to make me better as I go along. So it's something that I really enjoy doing.
Awesome.
All right. This is the time of the show where I hit this little button right here. Ooh. And Kent, you are the only one this week to watch a TED Talk.
Oh, man.
I know.
This is my turn. Yeah, so I watched a video by Suki Kim, and it was called This is What It's Like to Teach in North Korea. She is a Korean-American. She was born in South Korea, and she now lives in the United States. And she taught classes in North Korea for about 6 months. And it was right at the end of Kim Jong-il's life. And she was actually there when he passed away, and she had to leave the country at that point. But it kind of gives an insight into what it's like for these kids growing up in North Korea and the brainwashing, basically, that they get. Because she really struggled with, she wanted to teach them like critical thinking and how to think for yourself and things like that. But then she realized that sort of thinking could actually get them killed.
Yeah,
and you really need to, I highly recommend this talk to anyone, because it gives you a different perspective, somebody that actually knows what it's like on the inside of North Korea. And yeah, it's really good. Just check it out. The link is in the notes.
Let's cut to a quick cut from it.
It's just one subject. The flowers are named after him. The mountains are carved with his slogans. Every citizen wears the badge of the great leader at all times.
There's a little tip on it. She's talking about the great leader, you know, Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-il, whichever one, because they basically run it the same. So that's a little take from it. This is actually something, things like this I really love to watch and I love to learn from, because I am so close to the situation and I have been here, yep. This, you know, this is my second time here and stuff. So yeah, I'll definitely give this a watch later.
Yeah. Really, really good.
Very cool. So Ray, you haven't started watching the TED Talks yet. You probably need to start.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. So.
You've got the show notes, man. You should just click the link and browse around, see what happens.
Oh, so if I click Suki Kim, it doesn't take me to a porn site?
No.
Okay.
No. No, it's Suki Kim, not Kim Sucky. Yeah. I'm not sure dyslexic would really do it for you, but okay. All right. So, Jurassic World, we all watched that this last week. This is me and Kent's geeky thing of the week. We each, I think, have a slightly, well, more or less, difference of opinion on the show itself. Kent, you were the first one to watch it. I'll let you start. And I know Ray's got a few comments on it. So we'll get to him, and then I'll kind of wrap it up. So go ahead, Kent.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, oh, just a disclaimer here. There's going to be some spoilers on this show. We are going to talk about Jurassic World, like it's already been said, and we're going to talk about something later. It's going to have a lot of spoilers. So if you're not into spoilers, or you don't want to know about shows and movies and stuff like that, you might want to pause now.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Jurassic World, I was pretty excited to see this movie, because, you know, the Jurassic Park movies from, you know, the 90s and
90s, I don't even remember early when. 2000s.
Yeah, I don't remember when Jurassic Park 3 came out. I didn't really care for that one.
I don't think I watched it.
Yeah, well, the first Jurassic Park movie I really liked. I saw it probably 20 times, if not more. This movie for me kind of recaptured the same spirit as the first Jurassic Park. I enjoyed it. It was a popcorn movie. Get a big bucket of popcorn and just sit back and just enjoy yourself. Because, I mean, you already know what's going to happen. You know it's going to be, you know, hey, welcome to the park. Look at all these cool dinosaurs. Oh, we fucked up and made dinosaurs, and now they're going to kill us. And there's a whole bunch of killing. And you know this going in. You already know the plot. You could write a Jurassic Park movie in 10 minutes. Yeah. But just watching it happen is just... it's really cool. It the wonder, the you know, John Williams' music adds so much to these movies, just like he does with, you know, Star Wars or Indiana Jones or any of the other movies that he's been involved with. The music adds so much. And in the Jurassic Park movies, it's the sense of wonder is what you get. Not just from what you're seeing, but the music just enhances that. And that's one of the aspects that I really enjoy. But I had a great time watching this movie. My girlfriend Stephanie was super excited. She's a big Jurassic Park fan, and she was super excited to see this movie, and she wasn't disappointed. And Lucas went with us, and he really enjoyed it too. It gets thumbs up for me. I really liked it.
All right, and now for a counterbalance. Ray, what'd you think of the movie?
Well, all right, so I'm gonna agree with a lot of what Ken said. Like, you know, it was nostalgic. It took me back to the first Jurassic Park movie, and you know, and the other sequels. But again, okay, I saw it, and you know, cool. But it just kind of lost it. I mean, you really, the first time you saw the original Jurassic Park, it's just like, wow, you know. And the first time you really saw that kind of special effects, dinosaurs and stuff, I mean, you know, it was cool, but it just didn't have it. And honestly, I struggled to stay awake during the first part of the movie. I was like nodding off.
He actually asked me earlier. He said, "I fell asleep during the first part of the movie. What the fuck was the point of having the kids there?"
Yeah, the kids. Like, what the fuck? Those kids were just like, they added nothing to the plot or anything. They were just hanging out.
Yeah, no, I think they put the kids in there just to give kids watching the movie somebody to relate to.
That, and I think they were the sympathetic protagonist. I mean, they didn't really move the story forward, but they gave you a reason to care about the people.
Right.
Because seriously, what's her name that played the lead lady?
Oh, Bryce Dallas Howard, shit, something.
Whatever. Nobody gives a shit about her or her character right from the get-go. Nobody cares.
True.
And unless you're just really into skinny redheads, no, you don't give a shit about her at all, ever.
I wanted her to die.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was almost kind of half expecting it and wanting it, but whatever. That has some dealings to do with the fact that I didn't really enjoy her character. Her acting was fine, but her character in this movie and in the Twilight movies was just shitty. So, whatever.
Chris Pratt was probably the best part of the movie. The only reason why I really saw it, I really like that dude. He's funny, man. He's a good actor. And he did a great job in the movie.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah, he's kind of like the superstar right now. Yeah. He's getting all the big roles. Yeah. They're actually talking about making him the new Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but I heard that his Jurassic Park commitments may be a little too much, because he signed on for the bazillion sequels that eventually happened, and that was suck.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. He said he was locked up for multiple Jurassic Park, and then, of course, Guardians. He would be a good Indiana Jones, I think.
Yeah,
Out of everybody out there right now, I think he would be the good choice.
Yeah.
So I went and saw the movie. I watched it, unlike Ray and you, Kent. I watched it by myself, on base at the local crap theater. My first thoughts of it, I got into the movie, I started watching it, and I saw the buildup. The plot, like you said, Kent, was, I mean, it's there. You're not in there for any surprises. There's maybe a couple jump scares that might get you. There's some points where there's some tension built up that just kind of fades away, that, you know, leads into some further jump scares later on. But overall, when you know what the story is going to be, I mean, it's, you know, you go into it knowing what the story is. The way that it played out, I thought, was very family friendly. I thought it was conducive to a family environment. I think there's one cuss word in the entire movie. And the storyline itself, the way it played out, laid it very softly for the kids that were watching it. But there's enough tension there to keep interests the interest of the adults. I mean, except for Ray.
I did those off in the beginning.
Now, compared to the original, first of all, the original was the first time that many of us, myself included, had ever experienced THX surround sound. That was one of the big kickers of that movie. So it was the first time you're sitting in a theater, and when the dinosaur stomps on the ground, the whole theater shook.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Right.
And also that movie represented, it was the Avatar of its age when it came to CGI.
True, true.
This movie, other than a few lighting mistakes, it towards the very end of the movie, when it's at night and the lights should have been coming from all around, it still had the dinosaurs still had the lighting coming from the top, which was, you know, that's a editorial error. But other than that, the CGI was amazing. It flowed very well. The actors acted it out very well. It was hard to tell at certain points where they were playing with the air with imaginary shit and where they had actual models that later on got covered up by the CGI. Or, you know, were teletronics to begin with. So I thought that was great. And I can't really judge it on the sound because, again, I watched it in the base theater. So, yeah, you kind of got to deal with what you have. But overall, I enjoyed it. Now, one thing that I really thought was particularly well played was there in towards the middle of the movie, there's a kickback towards the first movie. When they, you know, when they go into the original Jurassic Park, it's got the original dome, the you know, all that stuff. I thought that played in very well to the story. It did, it added a level of depth for those who had seen previous movies, but did not require any knowledge of the viewer if they hadn't seen previous movies. It in fact would have,
and
just,
I'm glad you
would have added just a little bit more mystery to it. But it just by how it centered back on itself that way, it just made it more of an immersive environment, an immersive experience. And I thought that was excellently played out.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up too, because that plays into what I was talking about with John Williams' music. Because during that scene, there was the original Jurassic Park theme playing in a very slow, like one note every 2 seconds or something.
Yeah.
Just very subtle in the background was playing that. That was a really nice touch. I really enjoyed that scene a lot.
It turned the original theme almost into a environmental sound. Like you know, it was almost filler sound, but you could definitely tell that it was the original theme. And the whole scene, the fact they didn't dive too deep into it, it was, you know, made it. Yeah, I just thought it was really well done. I think that was probably my favorite part of the movie. From an artistic sense.
Yep.
Now I actually liked the dinosaur that had 15 different things built into it. I saw it from the very beginning. As soon as the monster, you know, as soon as they started saying, "Well, we can't tell you what the new dinosaur hybrid is made of and everything else," I knew how it was going to go. The twist at the end when the dinosaurs start fighting, that was the first surprise to me, because I figured they were just going to have to, you know, kill them all or whatever. I didn't see that twist going on. But other than that, I kind of saw all of it, and I like how it played out. And I thought it was a good movie. I'd give it a 4 stars, which means that I would search it out and watch it again, but I wouldn't buy it on video.
Yeah, that's about where I'm sitting. I'd give it a 4.
Yeah.
I would give it are we doing out of 5 stars or?
Yeah. Yeah, five means you would go out and buy the disc.
Okay.
4 is that you would search out for it. If it came on like HBO or whatever, you'd go find it. 3 means you'd watch it if it happened to be on TV. Mm-hmm. 2 means you'd rather not, but it's not like it's going to hurt your feelings. 1 means you're going to avoid it at all costs.
I'd give it a solid 2.5.
So as long as it was past the boring part of the beginning, you'd watch the rest of it on TNT.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I like Chris Pratt and the Raptors and stuff. The favorite part of the movie for me was when he was like training the Raptors, and he's all like, you know, lock it up, you know. He was just funny, dude. And that was probably one of the best parts.
Yeah, I thought it was well played, especially considering the CGI. I really like how the CGI was incorporated into the movie. It didn't look fake at all, except for, like I said, the lighting at the end.
Yeah, some of the lighting. Yeah, you're right about that.
But other than that, it was really immersive, and it is really hard to tell. I mean, I liked it. I dug it.
It was okay. I mean, I was definitely kind of like, I mean, you know, well, this summer, it's not very strong for movies, so, you know, movie watch.
Yeah. All right, so now we have another spoiler to talk about. So before we get into it, Ray, how far are you on Game of Thrones?
Oh, I'm kind of.
TV show, books, which one?
TV show. I don't read the books.
Okay.
So. Okay. Yeah, and yeah, so all of us are completely caught up. We've seen all the way through the
10th episode of season 5, yeah.
Of season 5. Yeah, so for all the listeners, this is your spoiler alert right here. If you have not caught up on Game of Thrones and you care about Game of Thrones, you need to stop listening now.
And if you even if you've watched the shows and you want to have your opportunity to read the book separately, if you don't want the book spoiled, if you don't want the TV show, if there's anything about Game of Thrones you want to hide from yourself until you experience it in the original method intended, skip forward like 20 minutes.
Yep.
So Jon Snow's dead. Maybe.
Yeah. So, all right. So, neither one of you. Okay, Ray hasn't read any of the books at all, and right. Amos, you've been reading the books, but you have not gotten to this part in the books. Right. What I'm really curious your guys' reaction to that, because that was the big "oh my god" moment of the season.
Oh man!
Specifically to Jon Snow.
Yes.
Okay,
the mutiny murder of Jon Snow.
The mutiny came as no surprise. The killing of Jon Snow and in the fashion in which it occurred came as a mild surprise. Like, I wasn't expecting it right then at that moment. But his death as far as we know it. Did not come as a major surprise to me. It was more a matter of timing and tactic that got me.
Mm. So did you feel a shock? Did you feel like oh my god? Mm. Or what was your actual reaction when you realized that he was being killed?
It was until the very last scene, I had hope that Ghost would jump out of somewhere and, you know, and save the day, or the Red Woman would come out and blow her shit up or something, you know. But for him to actually be lying in the snow with the blood pouring out from underneath him, once that occurred and it kind of faded to black and the credits hit, I was... Like, I wasn't surprised, but it did change, because I've got several theories of the show that you and I have talked about before, and now those theories aren't out the window, but there has to be another major change in order for most of those theories to become, you know, possibilities again. So, namely, about 85% of my theories circle around Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen. So something has to happen with Jon Snow being resurrected, coming back. Maybe the Stone Lady, that kind of effect going on, or you know, which these are all things that I can see happening in some shape or form. But I'm at a loss as far as where I actually think it might go, you know, which path it might take to get there.
Yeah, Ray, what was your reaction?
I was pretty. Pretty pissed. I was like, fuck. I mean, the guy just kills off all the good characters, man. That fucker really pisses me off. I'm just glad the midget's still alive, for Christ's sake. Everybody's fucking dying, man. Who the fuck is left? The fucking, I don't know, the guy in the background over there to the left, is he going to be the new hero? What the fuck?
So moving from Jon Snow then, Ray, what did you think of Sansa and Reek? What happened with them? How did you perceive that? Because me and Ken have already talked about it, so I want to hear your, you know, unadulterated thoughts.
Yeah, I thought shit. So.
Right.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, so I thought I knew it was gonna, I knew Meek was gonna help her eventually because with the guilt and stuff, and I thought that was good that he finally, manned up and helped her and got over his fear of fucking
Ramsey.
Yeah, that fucker.
Okay, so in your mind, they jumped to freedom then, right? They escaped?
I don't know. I was hoping so. I'm kind of rooting for them. You know, I haven't read the book, so.
So what would you think about the possibility that they were actually jumping to their deaths in order to escape Ramsey?
I did not think that at all.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did not think that at all. That was
See, I didn't either when I watched it, but then hearing other people talk about it afterwards, that thought came into my mind, and I could see that as a viable story arc, but a depressing one because that's another major character gone, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay, Kent, now give us the book perspective. What do you remember about the book's part of that? First of all, react to the TV show, and then tell me what you thought about the books.
Okay. All right. Well, to back up to the Jon Snow thing, the Jon Snow death played out a little bit different than in the book, but the feeling was the same, I think. So I wasn't at all surprised. The only thing that surprised me really about the death in the TV show is that, wow, they did it already, which was my reaction to a lot of things that happened this season was like, holy shit, like this is already happening.
Yeah, this season was a breeze through of books 4 and 5.
Yeah. They are jumping. They're skipping so much in the books that they're in a lot of storylines are either caught up with the books. In the case of Jon Snow's death, that's precisely accurate because book 5 ends with Jon Snow dying, same way that season 5 ended with Jon Snow dying. A lot of other places, they've actually gone past where the books have gone. Most of my surprises this season was that, like, holy shit, you're really going this far. Now, the whole Sansa thing, in the books, that's not Sansa. Sansa is in a completely different part of the world. She's with Littlefinger, but they're somewhere else. They're not doing anything to do with Winterfell and the Boltons or any of that sort of stuff. The character that is in the Sansa role was Jane Poole, I think was her name. It was one of Sansa's childhood friends. They're passing her off as Arya Stark, actually. Yep. Because Arya is basically considered dead by
everyone,
by the world.
Right.
Yeah. And so, but the Lannisters basically came up with this idea that, and I think this was Tywin Lannister's brainchild, that he found this girl and he said, you know what? We're going to pretend that she's Arya Stark and we're going to marry her to Ramsay Bolton, so that we can solidify the Bolton Lannister alliance and et cetera, et cetera. And so all of the Sansa scenes, that was this girl, Jane, I think was her name. So that played out a little bit different. Now on to the jumping off the wall scene. They definitely absolutely were not jumping to their deaths. In fact, in the books, they jumped and they went and rejoined, or not rejoined, but joined up with Stannis' army. And the whole escape plot. See, this is another divergence from the show. Mance Rayder, you remember, was burned alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, starting to be burned alive and then
killed by Jon
Snow. Right. Which that whole scene played out a little bit different in the books too, because it turns out that Mance Rayder isn't dead and Jon Snow sent him on a mission to rescue who he thought was Arya, but turns out to be this girl pretending to be Arya. So Mance Rayder is on this mission to Winterfell to rescue Jon Snow's sister. And
While at the same time, Stannis is taking Winterfell or trying to take Winterfell.
Right. Yeah, but it's not. It played out so differently. And then in the books, Stannis is still alive. Brienne, not anywhere near Winterfell. This whole, I don't know. There's some of the decisions that the showrunners have made for this season. I don't follow where they're gonna go, because Martin's got his own ideas, and we're impatiently waiting for the next book to come out. So it's gonna be interesting to see where he takes certain characters and storylines versus where the show is taking things. Because he said a while back that he's already told the showrunners the end of the story.
Right.
And as long as they both end up in the same place, the show can basically do whatever they want to do, as long as they end up in the same place.
They still get every script okayed by Martin. Like, he still has final approval on every script.
He doesn't have final approval. He's an advisor on the show, and they take his word because they respect his work. But there's decisions that they've made that he hasn't agreed with.
Right. I don't know. What do you think about some of the fans speculating on what's going on, really, with like Jon Snow and the Targaryen girl?
Well, okay, the thing about Jon Snow being dead or not being dead, a couple of things. The showrunners have said that dead is dead,
right.
what you saw at the end of season 5 is exactly as they portrayed it. He is dead.
Right.
However, George R. R. Martin has been quoted as saying that you never know.
Right.
This is, this is a Song of Ice and Fire, and not everyone stays dead.
Right.
So you never know.
Right.
Which you actually know to be true if you've read the books.
Right. There's been several characters that have been brought back to life, mostly by Red Priests.
Yes.
Beric Dondarrion is a perfect example. He's been resurrected multiple times. In fact, Catelyn Stark in the books brought back to life as Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think they're going to pursue that in the TV show. I think she's like dead
also,
in the show.
Also in the show, wasn't the Red Priestess chick, didn't she arrive when Jon Snow, right before Jon Snow got shanked?
In the show, yeah, yes, but in the books, I understand she never left Winterfell, right? She didn't.
That's right, yeah.
She didn't ride south with Stannis.
Correct, and neither did Selyse or what's the girl's name? What's what's Stannis' daughter's name? Yeah, anyway. Stannis' wife and daughter and the Red Woman, Melisandre, all three of them were still at Castle Black during all of those events.
Nice.
So it is possible that Melisandre could resurrect Jon Snow, but I don't know if that'll happen, because they'll probably burn. I imagine they're going to burn.
Now, Kit Harington has been quoted as saying that he is not appearing next year. Like, his contract has ended.
Right.
Right. I read that too.
Now, of course, that doesn't mean he can't come back in further, later seasons, like Hodor and Bran are expected back this next season.
Right.
I heard one theory, like somebody was saying that he maybe has spirited into his dog or whatever, because he's a warg.
A warg?
Warg, yeah. And I was like,
that would kind of suck. I could see that as well, especially with the connection that he had with Ghost.
Yeah, other wargs have done that.
In the books, they allude to a deeper connection with all of the direwolves, even though... Sansa's direwolf is dead. Is never mentioned again. In fact, it's actually mentioned that the other wolves have lost their connection. Bran senses that when he wargs through what the hell is Bran's dog's name? Yeah.
It's been a while.
When Bran wargs through his dog, he senses that one of the others is gone.
Yeah. Now,
during one thinking, particular adventure, but
I don't remember for sure, but I think in the book, I think the mutineers also killed Ghost. I think, but I could be wrong about that. I'll have to look that up. But yeah, because I know, like, well, maybe I'm confusing that with Rob's direwolf, because they killed Rob and his wolf.
Yeah. Because they had his wolf locked up in the pens.
A buddy of mine said if you guys would look at the chat, he's answered all your questions.
Oh.
What did he say there?
See, now he's saying that Stannis is still alive in the show also.
I'm pretty sure that he died.
Yeah, I don't see that. Yeah, Shireen was Stannis' daughter.
Unless.
And Summer is Bran's direwolf. But yeah, I don't know. Even though they didn't show Brienne killing Stannis, I think it felt pretty clear that she killed him. She was exacting her revenge. Yeah. Her.
But then again, they didn't show it, so.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's that old adage that, you know, if you don't see the body, they're not dead.
Right.
But
yeah, even then, I mean,
I don't see a scenario. Why would Brienne not kill him? Why would you get to that point and then not kill him?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just don't see any outlet.
No. Brienne, she loved him too much.
Renly.
Yeah, she loved Renly too much in a devotion and loyalty type of way that, you know, her blood oath would be to exact that revenge just the same as it would be for Lady Caitlin. I don't see her giving up on either one of those in any way, shape, or form at any time.
He asked for her to do her duty. So I don't know what would stop her. Maybe the red chick. I
don't see any other solution there.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so let's travel the waters a little bit and cruise on over to Arya Stark.
Okay.
We know what happened in the show, and I didn't realize that she was going blind. I thought she was actually dying. Like, you know, she said, "I couldn't see, I couldn't see, I couldn't see." And then it kind of just fades away from her and doesn't go back to her. So I didn't get the impression that she was going blind. I actually thought she was dying, which was the biggest surprise to me, because there's no fucking way I would continue to watch Game of Thrones if Arya died in such a pitiful fucking manner.
Yeah, she's one of my favorites.
So, Kent, give us the book scoop.
No, okay, this is one of the few storylines that hasn't been surpassed in the TV show. I like the way that it's played out on the show. It is a bit different than right. in the books, but it's pretty much in keeping. And yeah, she absolutely goes blind in the books, but the books are past that. She's already been through her blindness. She's not blind anymore. She's on her way. She's on this path to being a
badass.
But you know, to be a full member of the what is her organization called with the faceless
the faceless god.
A faceless man, I think, is what they're called. She's well on her way, and I think they portray that pretty well in the TV show. I like how they're going with that.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite story arcs.
Yeah.
What do you think, Amos?
Again, I've loved Arya since the first scene. The entire time reading the first three books, because I haven't finished the fourth one yet, but reading the first three books, it just seemed like she, to me, shows the biggest character development in the books. She starts out as basically a rough and tumble tomboy, that has no idea of the bigger picture in the world. And she's been taken down this dark path, especially in the books. It gets a little crazier than it does on the show. And she sees things that really change her perspective about people and how she interacts with them. And I really love watching her character development. I think it's amazing.
Yep. I'm enjoying that a lot. You know, there were some minor differences in the books. Like, for example, it wasn't Sir Marin that she killed. But there was somebody else on her list. It was Raff the Sweetling, if you remember from, I think, like season two.
Right.
It was the first, one of the first people on her kill list. The prayer that she used to say every night, the list of names. Raff the Sweetling was on there. He was in Braavos, and she killed him.
But it's the same. It's still the same.
I mean,
it's still the setback in her transition that had to occur for her to.
Yeah, in the books, Marin is still alive, so probably not a big deal. I mean, Sir Marin, who cares?
Yeah, you can replace him with somebody else. Exactly.
So, yeah. The whole Jaime Lannister and Bronn going to Dorne, that was completely made up for the show. At the time, Jaime was in the Riverlands trying to put down the last remnants of Robb Stark's army. He was talking to the Tullys, trying to take River Run peacefully without any bloodshed. That's where he's at in the books. Dorne, the whole Dorne thing played out way differently in the books, because there was a plot going on with the Sand Snakes and all that. That was the were they explicit in calling the girls the Sand Snakes?
They mention it at the end of one episode, at like episode 8, I think they mention it when the episode they are introduced on. She mentions it in their mother or whatever mentions it in passing, but it's not.
Okay.
It's
they're basically the Sand Snakes are basically
the three
bastard daughters of Oberyn Martell, the one that was killed in, I think it was in season 4.
Yeah, Oberyn. Right.
In Tyrion's trial,
mm-hmm.
Man Mountain.
Yeah, the Mountain and Oberyn killed each other basically.
Zombie Mountain is infected.
Yes,
that's awesome.
That's gonna be interesting, because that whole thing is pretty much the same in the book as it is in the show, and it's just kind of left there like, okay, he's a zombie and he's part of the white knights, Kingsguard.
I think it's funny
and
that
nobody knows who he is.
I thought it was funny that what's his name was like, yeah, he's sworn an oath to silence.
Yep. Like Qyburn said that, yeah.
Like, no, he can't talk. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting to see where that goes. Speaking of resurrected characters.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And also speaking of the Mountain and Oberon, that battle went down slightly different. that battle went down different than in the books than in the show. And there are minor differences. And the only reason I know that is because I read the book, that part of the book, and then watched that episode like right afterwards. But essentially, they died differently than in the book. And I think the way that they died in the show was just cleaner. It's easier to visualize than it was in the book, because the book is, of course, second person. So, I thought that was another one of those transitions where, you're talking about all the places where the books and the show deviate. That was one of those areas where it deviated, and I think it ended up better than what the book would have translated if you tried to do it literally.
What about Cersei when she was doing the Walk of Shame thing? Was that her real boobs? Or was it a stand-in boob?
That's
I read someplace that she has like a no nudity clause, and that it was somebody else's body.
Right. That is the understanding that I have as well. But if you just want to go by accuracy, Cersei's had what, 5 kids?
Uh-huh.
Right? Three daughters, 2 boys?
Yeah.
Three daughters. Where are you getting that? She had 2 boys and 1 girl.
I think she had more than that.
Yeah, I did too. Hmm. But either way, maybe it is only 3.
It was nice. I just want to know if they were hurting. I mean, she had great nudity before.
It was neither the actress, in my opinion, I don't think it was neither the actress nor was it accurate, especially considering if she's had 3 kids, that body would not have been walking down like that.
Hey man, you're talking about a place with dragons, okay? Maybe women over there, when they give birth, they get like extra hot. You don't know that. Good Hayden.
Yeah, but no, and that whole thing, I was satisfied with how they played that out in the show. Again, there were some differences, but it all ended up in the same place. Mm-hmm. And
well, if I was her, I would be just thinking about killing all those people. Like I hated her.
Oh yeah, because she gave him the power, and then he used it to bring her down.
And it was awesome because I hate her so much, but now I'm on her side. I want them all to die.
Right. Yeah, I still want her to suffer even more in the end. But now I want her enemies to suffer just as much.
Yeah, there's something about religious zealots. I just want her to wipe them out. I want to see zombie mountain just go to town.
Yeah, something crazy.
Just real quick, going back to the Jaime and Bronn thing. That's one of the changes in the show that I really, really enjoy. Because it's one of those things ultimately that doesn't really matter because the characters aren't doing anything overly important. Well, important, yes, but not necessarily for a TV audience. But Bronn, the character in the TV show, is fucking amazing. He's hilarious. He's a fucking badass. And I want to see as much of him on screen as possible. And, you know, it's no longer possible to have him and Tyrion together, which was an amazing duo.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage and whoever plays Bronn, I don't even know his name, but that guy is great. And the more I get to see him, the better. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. He he reminds me of my buddy Junior Owens, a fellow Juvat from Coonson. You take Bronn and throw him on a motorcycle and give him a Budweiser, and you have Junior. And the voices sound the same. They use like the same language, the same thought processes. I personally identify with Bronn just because of that, and it makes me laugh every time. So
yeah,
yeah. I wish I had someone to identify with Peter Dinklage's, you know, Tyrion, but I just think he plays him so fucking well. It's just amazing.
Yeah,
but. All right. Is there any major story arcs that we need to cover in that?
I think I'm pretty satisfied.
Ray,
you got anything else for you?
Just the whole boob thing, and I want to know if those were boobs or not.
That's all I care about is the boobs.
They were fabulous. She had a nice little tight cooch too. It was good.
It's just awful. True, but awful.
Oh boy.
Yeah, you know.
So you've got a thing on here, Kent. New money.
Yeah, have you guys heard about this? There's a new $10 bill coming out, and not for a little while. It's coming out in 2020, which is nothing too crazy. They redraw the money, or you know, reissue money every few years or whatever. But in 2020, we're getting a new $10 bill, but what's special about this one, a couple things, but the big headline grabber is that there's going to be a portrait of a woman on the $10 bill.
Oh, God.
It's going to correspond with the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which, of course, gave women the right to vote. So that's kind of neat. The last time that a woman was pictured on U.S. currency was Martha Washington, and that was over 100 years ago since we've had a woman on our currency. That's kind of cool. One other thing that I think is actually even cooler than the woman's portrait on the money, and this is not nearly the attention grabber as the woman thing, but they're going to add a tactile feature that allows blind people to be able to tell what currency they have in their hands just by touching it.
Jesus Christ, are we going to fucking appease to everybody?
This has actually been a criticism. When they redid the but remember when all the bills looked like the current $1 bill?
Yes.
Like they all had the same, and then they changed it to the new ones, and everybody's, oh, they're cartoony and this and that. When they did that, the United States received international scorn because they didn't take any measures to help with disabled people. You know, changing the color, changing the sizes, any of that. Nothing like that was done with the bill. It was just basically redrawn to help evade counterfeit, which, as we know, it didn't work for very long.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it's always a game of cat and mouse. You know, you come up with a measure, and then there's going to be a countermeasure, and then we got to counter that, and then they counter that, and so forth.
Right. You build an idiot-proof idea, they'll come up with a better idiot. So
right.
But that was one of the criticisms that they had actually back then, and I don't even remember what year that was. But it was right after high school, so probably late 90s, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was around there somewhere. So I've been expecting some major change like this to occur. It was surprises me most, honestly, not having a woman on the bill at that. You know, we're going to get into the subject. I'm actually going to delay it until next week because we just don't have time to properly give it the talk that we need to this week. But there is an issue I have about making such a big deal about things like this. Each time that these things happen, we make a big deal out of it, and it elevates. Well, it continues the bias against the equality that I think most people want.
Okay.
Celebrating the change is, in my opinion, to a certain extent, carrying forth those points of segregation. I'm not even sure how to express it more fluidly than that.
I know what you're saying.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. Take for example, gay rights. Okay, if we rewind 20 years ago and you want to talk about, you know, gay rights or whatever, you will almost, except for in certain communities, especially obviously the gay community, you're going to get some serious fucking backlash. People are going to be like, yo, hell no. But today, because there's been so much, I guess good media or whatever for the gay community, you know, you've got your gay rights parades and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You do a poll today and most people, the majority of people are like, oh yeah, gays are fine. Whereas 20 years ago, it would have been just the exact opposite. It'd be rare to find somebody who was like, oh yeah, gays are cool, because of the, you know, people didn't want to associate themselves with homosexuality or whatever. And I think, you know, this is true in most realms. I think putting a spotlight on the differences and the, you know, diversity or whatever, I think that changes mindsets. I think that,
maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it can go both ways, but I think overall, it's a good good thing. Gets the people to change their mind and highlights the differences. So they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess it's fine.
Yeah, I know people that are like, you know, hate gay people or whatever. They still hate gay people, and I know people are open minded, and they're still open minded. You know, it's just I can understand what both of you guys are saying. But that's a whole nother show, man.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think Amos's feed froze.
Oh, good. We don't have to listen.
No, I simply don't have anything more to add without either getting myself in trouble or talking myself into a circle. And then I've got incomplete thoughts that I need to spend a little bit more time on.
Absolutely.
In order to appropriately express in a public forum without enough alcohol.
We can circle back.
All right.
So, but again,
it's a subject we can revisit at another show.
I've got a topic down there that just moved off the schedule because I think it's something that we don't have time this week to really dive into enough.
Right.
Over my overall impression, I don't care who they put on the stuff. I just don't want it to be limited to anybody. You know,
sure.
I mean, the Treasury by law says that it has to be a person who's no longer living. Got it. Cool. You don't want them, you don't want to put somebody on the bill and then that person go and become some dictator or serial killer or some shit. Got it. So, but as far as who they put on there, I just don't want it to be limited. I don't want it to be like, well, we can't put so-and-so on there because of such and such, you know, if these people are people that we hold dearly in American society and American, tribute, then their sexual orientation, their gender, their ethnicity, any of that shouldn't even be a factor. And I, you know, that's just my overall thought on it.
Right. And that's our future state or the desired future state. But we have to inject diversity in order to achieve that state, I think.
Can we just put me in suspended animation until we get to the point where we can stop making this such a big fucking deal?
Right.
Like I'm ready to be there. I've been ready for like 5 years, you know what I mean?
yeah.
And I was thinking about it and I used to think I had the greatest gaydar in the world. Like I could pick out gay folk like nobody's business. If you were a gay, bi, les, whatever you want to call yourself, if you were not on the typical social norm, or even if you were just a stoner or a jock or whatever, you know, just by being around you for a little bit, I could figure out what clique and what lifestyle you were in. You know, I mean,
pigeonhole somebody pretty quickly.
Yeah, it was, but I did it pretty accurately. Just recently, and I don't want to say their name on the air, but just recently I found out that a friend of mine that I've known for years is gay.
Mm-hmm.
Had no fucking clue.
You had no clue.
Yeah.
It never even occurred to me. Like it never came to my mind. Hey, is this person gay? Like, and when I found out, it was just like, yeah, I had no idea. But on the same token, I almost don't even care. Like it, you know. Okay, it elevates my awareness of who they may be with should I ever meet their partner. But other than that, you know, it didn't affect me at all. And
yeah, it's getting to the point with me now. It's getting to the point where it's like, you know, oh, I didn't know you were from, you know, wherever. I didn't know you were from Idaho. It doesn't really matter, but it's good trivia. You know, oh, okay. It's good to know you're from Idaho.
Yeah, okay. So you know, I can break out some Buckeye jokes on you. Got it. Okay, cool. You know? Other than that, it's just... Yeah. And I don't know if it's our particular generation. I know Ray hates everybody. Based solely on their stereotypes. I hate everybody. I hate everybody just on the fact they're alive in my world and I don't want most of them there. Ray just pigeonholes everybody and hates them for the pigeonholes that he stuck them in, whether or not they belong.
Oh, man. Whatever.
So
I hate everybody equally. I hate the human race, basically, because we all suck.
Yeah, I really don't like white people.
My gaydar's going off right now.
Yeah? Is it sunny down here? Okay, so... yeah. In other words, put people on the money. Let's cycle the money out on a regular basis. Let's make it a thing where, you know, let's get some more people in there. I don't see any reason to have, you know, George Washington on the quarter for 485 years.
Let's change
you know?
It up. I want to see a $9 bill. $9 bill. Come on. With $9 bill with fucking... The dude who invented
I just think it's
Harbor Gossett.
That's dumb.
I think it's unfair that George Washington has a coin and a bill.
Yeah, that's two things.
I think it's unfair that we're still being forced to use fucking pennies and nickels.
That motherfucker won't say.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, let's get rid of them sons of bitches. They're practically useless, and the military doesn't even use them overseas anyway. So, well, the nickels still, but not pennies.
I was going to say, oh, that's a new one. But yeah. It costs way too much to ship a penny. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It costs more than a penny to create a penny. So just the act of making a penny, you lose money. How does that fucking make sense? I don't understand. If for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, we'll have a link in the show notes for some Vlogbrothers. They got a real good breakdown of it. I think it was Hank that broke it down and went on a 4-minute tirade on how just stupid that shit is. So
well, once we move to all digital currency, it's not going to matter.
No, because they'll still break that shit down. Then you'll have digital pennies that suck just as bad. Like, fuck that.
And the IRS will get every penny, every percentage.
All right. Before we get into some quick notes about E3 that happened earlier this week, Ray, you got something on here about how to beat Batman. So heard that you just fucking hate him. You despise him. He's worthless. And you really can't stand the fact that Batman was ever a character written or imagined in the gleam of any child's eye. So.
No. Batman was okay until, like, you know, Christopher Nolan, everybody was on his nuts about everything. I'm just trying to bring him down a peg where he's supposed to be. You know,
back down to the rich mortal white privilege realm.
Back down to like fucking Adam West Batman.
Oh, see,
back that was so
there.
Fun.
Back down to there.
Yeah, Kent's like whoa.
now, don't get me wrong. I love Adam West. I love the Adam West 1960s Batman for what it is. But that's not the Batman that I know and love.
No,
that's a
whole
separate thing.
is it Adam West that's in The Family Guy?
Yes.
As the mayor, Adam West. That's my favorite Adam West role. Just because, like every time I watch that show and I hear that voice and I see the little yellow cartoon, I'm like, that's not.
He's so awesome.
It's something not right.
little yellow cartoon. I think you're confusing it with The Simpsons.
No, those cartoons are little yellow cartoons to me.
Yeah,
yeah. Right on. I think Adam West is queer too, isn't he?
I have no idea.
That's the proper language to use. So there you go.
He's one of those guys. Good on him.
I think that's one of those words that, you know, that's their word and only they can use it.
Oh my God, do we need to get in that language right now? No, that is not something you need to be fucking going off on. Holy shit.
Oh my God,
Sarah
brought that up. Jesus Christ. Oh my God. Anyway, Batman.
Speaking of shit that some people can fucking say and other people can't.
That'd be Batman. Okay, so.
I'm going to wake up the fucking neighbors and yelling so loud.
It's my Batman. Yeah. My Batman jab, sorry.
Until someone comes back at it in a different way.
I'm waiting for somebody to come back and rage argue.
Yeah, we're just going to go with Batman sucks.
All right, cool.
Because why not?
Yeah.
Because physics, because science, because daylight.
Because I'm Batman.
Because football, yeah, all those things.
Awesome.
All right, Kent. E3, man.
Yeah, I put this in the show notes, and I actually don't have a whole lot to say about it. The only thing I wanted to point out is that the new Battlefront game.
Oh, yeah.
They released some footage, some actual gameplay footage, and holy shit, it looks awesome. Yeah. I am not a first-person shooter guy per se, but I am absolutely a Star Wars guy, and this game looks awesome.
Right. Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I mentioned this before, I used to play Battlefront on my PSP
me too.
A long time ago, and I loved that game, so I'm might be picking this one up. So we'll see. I mean, other than that, the only thing that I really cared about with any of the E3 stuff that I've read or listened to is there was a lot of VR stuff and a lot of like the Microsoft HoloLens stuff going on that a lot of people were excited about. And I, you know, if I'm next time I'm at a convention or a conference or whatever that's got one of these VR headsets or the HoloLens, you know, I'm going to wait in line to try this thing out because everybody's saying amazing things about it and I have yet to experience it. So
I think the big news for me out of all the stuff that, I mean, because you got Fallout 4 coming to Xbox Xbox One, Gears of War 4. The big news to me that really is going to tip the tide and just, it pisses me off that it takes E3 for something like this to come out. Why can't they just do this ahead of time? Is that Xbox One is now backwards compatible with all the old 360 games.
Is it really? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't buy one because of that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. The PS3 or PS4 and Xbox One. That was one of the things that, like, why won't that work? Right. When I got my 360, I was like, why won't my old games work? You know?
Exactly.
It just, the backwards compatibility, man, that's, I don't understand why that's not a higher priority.
Like it has been for Nintendo.
Oh my God! See, Nintendo is going astray in every aspect of gaming.
Yeah.
It started with the GameCube, in my opinion. I saw the innovation in the N64. I think they innovated a little oddly. But you know, I saw the innovation. They were trying to push the envelope, and it fell off the table, and they just kept pushing it. And I feel so sorry for Nintendo.
Yeah, I think ever since the PlayStation came out, Nintendo has been the alternative choice. It's like you're either mainstream or you're alternative. It's pretty much that's what Nintendo
is. Yeah, I think Nintendo is more of a kids and female type thing. Personally.
Hashtag Gamergate.
Oh my god.
let the hate mail flow.
Jesus. Hitman, new Hitman game coming out. Looks pretty awesome. Nintendo, Star Fox, like really. New Zelda and Metroid game for the 3DS.
Somebody messaged me and said, why don't you come out on the air? Who are these people? Oh, that's Brian. Jesus.
It's probably your mom. there's a lot of cool stuff, but really what it came down to is the Xbox One now being backwards compatible with Xbox 360 games. That's amazing to me, and amazing why it wasn't always like that. And the Battlefront gameplay trailer from the Battle of Hoth. So, Ken, I ask you this. When Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 came out, you and I got a demo disc that I'm pretty sure lasted us a lot longer than it was designed to last.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had gotten to the point where just on the demo levels, we were getting scores that were completely fucking absurd. And then the game itself actually came out. We were in Japan, so it took us a while to get it, and I think we both got it within like a day of each other. And we tore through that game like nobody's freaking business. And once we got the game, like the demo disc just went to the wayside because it was so close to the actual game. There were some differences, but it was very close. The level designer and everything else, I mean, it really gave you the feel of the game, and we dove straight in. How amazing would it be if there was a fully playable Battlefront, Battle of Hoth, just that one level?
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Like, how soon would you go out and get a fucking Xbox One?
Yesterday.
See, I'm more of a Sony leaner. I'd probably go for the PS4 before I would Xbox One. But even still, the next gen system, or I guess current gen now, Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it would definitely put it higher on my purchase priority list, I think. I'd be super excited about that.
So if Battlefront's only coming out on the next-gen systems or current-gen, the Xbox One and the PS4, does that change your mind about rushing out to get a console?
Well, that's what I was saying. That's it puts that higher on my purchase priority list.
Actually, Battlefront is the only reason why I'm going to get PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't going to get it, but when I saw Battlefront, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, it looks pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, I was happy with it.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. So I actually I was going to prepare a bumper for this next segment, but I didn't get time to because I was too busy kicking Ray's ass at bingo.
I'll eat a dick.
Stealing his fucking money. we're going to start a new section called the Weekly Tithe. And it's going to be basically a free segment, free advertising to someone or something that has inspired us, you know, inspired me and Kent to do what we do. And I came up with the idea because a lot of the shows that I listen to, and Kent, I'm sure that you're the same way, they, you know, you have Patreon and you have t-shirts and you have this and you have that. But one of the basic ways that you can get people, you know, to support the projects that you really love is to tell them about it and make sure that they're aware of it. So
absolutely.
This week, my tithe, the thing that I'm going to, I'm not getting any money or anything else from this. It's just something I'm doing for the individual or project. Tom Merritt. I know we've talked about him before, mentioned some things. He just celebrated 10 years of podcasting with the BOL reunion back in March, late March. He's been a part of many of the podcasts that I've done. He's been a part of some of the festivals that I've gone to and that I really like. And the thing that gets me about him is he's constantly a professional. Even when you meet him in person after a six-pack of beer, he's still a professional. He still takes the time to talk to the people who watch his shows and listen to his podcast and things like that. And he's really a point of inspiration, especially for this show, for the Ritual Misery podcast in particular. So, and with that, I also want to say that Ted, you know, the... Ted shows, they're not sponsoring us in any way, shape, or form. We're just really big fucking fans.
Yep. So. But no, yeah, I'm going to second everything that you said about Tom Merritt. The dude is awesome. One of the highlights for me at South by Southwest this year was getting to meet Tom. The guy is awesome. He's got several podcasts out there. He's got DTNS, the Daily Tech News Show. He's on Current Geek, Sword and Laser,
East Meets West. It's a thing.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. Just go to, what is it? Tom Merritt.com?
Yeah, TomMerritt.com. Or look him up on Twitter, Ace Detect, ACEDTECT.
Yep. So. Yeah, the dude is awesome. And he's got a lot of podcasts out there that are really, really good. I call him the godfather of podcasting just because he's been around so long. And plus, he's the know-it-all. He is the guy that's going to take time out of his day to answer a question that you have, either about his show content or just about podcasting in general.
Yep.
The guy is just awesome and he does good stuff.
And he's amazingly intelligent. Like, he's got a memory like nobody's business.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it's people like Tom Merritt that are going to take podcasting, into the next level, which he's been doing for years now, but he's really taking it on the individual level. He's the one that started, him and Scott Johnson and Brian Brushwood really are the ones that started the Patreon push for podcasts, to get that to where podcasters can actually go independent and get paid halfway decently and, you know, get a value for value model for their work. And he's taking podcasting to that next level. He's pushing the limits of it. He's doing things every day that further the art of podcasting and continue to inspire individual podcasters, fresh starts like Kent and I. And if you haven't heard of any Tom Merritt stuff, TomMerritt.com, find something on there that's interesting to you. If you have any geek in you at all, reading, movies, tech, history, anything like that, you're going to find something on his page that'll interest you. And I guarantee there are very few, if any, personalities out there that can deliver it in a manner in which you will enjoy more. So he's my my weekly tithe for the week is Tom Merritt. You can find him at TomMerritt.com and Ace Detect on Twitter, ACEDTECT.
Yep.
Never heard of him.
Well, you know, that's you, though. Yeah.
And apparently a bunch of other people. Yeah. All right. Cool. Check him out. Check him out. Tom, what's his name?
Tom
Merritt. Merritt.
TomMerritt. Two. It's a two M's, two R's, two T's.
That's a lot of twos.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, there's three twos, which is disappointing. So yeah, there you go. That's that. What else you guys got for this week, man? Anything that we forgot? Anything that we missed?
No, I think we covered it all, man.
A lot.
All right, yeah, we're actually going pretty long. We had brought our shows down to a reasonable level, and now this show just blows all that out of the water. speaking of supporting people, if you would like to support this show, you can go to ritualmisery.com/support. Find out all the different ways to support us between the Amazon link, which won't cost you anything extra, but kicks a little bit back to us, the Patreon, and just any other way that you can support us, following us, tagging us, liking us on iTunes, anything like that. We appreciate all of that. Telling your friends about it. Hey, here's this podcast, these two geeks that are in the military are related to the military now. I can't even say we're in the military.
I'm still active duty.
Technically. With a big fat fucking beard. They like to talk geek shit and tech shit and whatever else comes to mind. And if you're enjoying the show, if you're listening on a regular basis, then you're enjoying it at least a little bit. Otherwise, you're just wasting your life. And you know, share that with somebody. There are other people out there that we would love to hear from and love to speak to. So you can just do that, and that's completely free. Kent, people can find you on Twitter.
Yep, @RM_DelNoche. I'm also on ratebeer.com. Username Del Noche. Check it out if you have any interest in beer.
Have you hit your 500 yet?
No, I'm at like 476, I think.
No, you did like get a couple of them from last week, right?
I did, yeah.
A couple of the New Mexico breweries?
Yep. I rated, two New Mexico beers that were actually really good, surprisingly really good. And one or two other beers I think I reviewed.
Awesome, awesome.
Is this your Twitter? What is it?
Twitter is @RM_DelNoche. I was talking about my rate beer.
Oh, rate account, beer.
Ratebeer.com.
Yeah. So username DelNoche.
Del Noche. Mm. Okay. All right. Cool. So, yeah.
I can be found on Twitter @EthanKane. Ray, are you on Twitter yet?
No, I'm not on Twitter. I have an account, but actually, I try to log in. I don't know. Fuck Twitter. Fuck that. You can find me in the fucking alleyway outside the gate, no sign, getting drunk, playing darts. Come to Korea.
Got it.
Come to Korea.
Yeah, he's trying to expand his social imprint. one X juicy at a time. So
X juicy. There's no juices out there. Come on.
Yeah. If you're trying to avoid Ray, which is a good place to do that, would be Twitter, and you can hop on over to @RitualMisery on Twitter, and you can find the show, find all the show notes, everything else, links to everything around there. We do all that good stuff there. RitualMisery.reddit.com if you have a specific topic you'd like to talk about or have us talk about. podcast@RitualMisery.com if you'd like to email us. It's pretty good, pretty easy to do. RitualMisery.com. If there's anything else that we haven't covered, it's all on RitualMisery.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail, 567-69-TRMPC. That's 567-698-7672. The music that is cutting in right about now, it comes courtesy of Kevin McLeod. He does great things over there in incomptech.com. Thank you for listening. For Kent, for me, and for you, and Ray, this is your Ritual Misery Podcast.
See ya.
Peace.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.